RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And boy, this is going to be an incredible episode. But first off, you've discovered a podcast dedicated to CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. This week's episode being The Undertaking, Season 1, Episode 21. I just want to see John Ratzenberger jump out and scream at them for a second here during
this. See, that's my theory, is that the Undertaking is it's a supervillain, and It's just John Ratzenberger in like tights and a cape, and that's
no cape, darling. So this was a fabulous episode. This was the May episode, May 1st, 2013 episode called The Undertaking, and it, in my opinion, I think this kind of kicks off, like, basically, it's not really a three-parter, but it's like a three-part season finale, because from now on, I think it's like pretty clear where everything is going. It's just, how are we going to get there, and who's going to get injured, hurt, killed, you know, in the process.
Yeah, I was worried that they would have too many shows to kind of drag this out, and now I'm worried they're not going to have enough
for this season. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. In this season, it's kind of shaping up to be really, really big. So
yeah, well, and with all the characters they've got, I mean, they dropped a number of kind of constant plot lines that we've been seeing over the past few weeks. There are at least three or four different character plot lines that I can think of off the top of my head, and we can get into this later, that they didn't even cover because they had so much other stuff, and it's like, wow, this is definitely enough to keep them busy through the next two episodes, so it'll be interesting to see where they go. Why don't you tell it, just in case people, it's been a while since they've seen the episode, or in case they missed it and just want to get a brief recap before we get into it, why don't you tell everybody what we got, what we had going on in the episode, Josh?
Okay, so here's what happened. In order to find out who kidnapped Walter, Felicity goes undercover in this illegal casino in Starling City to get dirt on him, on the casino guy, and find out more about Walter, right? So Ollie takes the law into his own hands, and he kind of stages a rescue of Walter after they find him. And then Tommy gives Laurel the truth about everything. Oliver tells her to go check, talk to him, and he tells Laurel the whole truth, how he's feeling. Not about Arrow, not about the vigilante, but the truth that Oliver still loves her. So Oliver discovers that Moira's wrapped up in a bigger scheme, for sure, and that Malcolm is responsible for kidnapping Walter. He's got a nice mean face on when he finds that out. And the whole time here, Diggle, he sits at home in his tight black tank top, you know, and showing off his muscles, but continues to just mutter, you know, I told you so. And, you know, because he knows. He knew all this stuff. He turns out to be, like, the only one right in this whole thing.
Right.
And in the flashbacks this week, they were different flashbacks. They weren't to the island. It's all prior to the island and the sinking of the Queen's Gambit. Malcolm, Frank, and Robert Queen discuss the cleanup of Starling City and the destruction of the Glades. So it was lots of new twists and turns in this one, which really took the season in a I don't want to say a different direction,
no,
but in another direction. You know, in addition to the ones they were doing.
Yeah, they kind of lit a candle under this storyline here and just blasted right off into space.
Yeah.
To really make for an exciting season finale. I mean, regardless of how far we get, I can say right now, this is an exciting, you know, ramp up to the end of the season. And, you know, I'll be happy if they leave us with a cliffhanger, because it'll give us something to talk about. I'm just, you know, one of those things where it's like you don't know you know, if someone's going to live or die or what's going to happen. Because right now it's, you know, it's every character for themselves, it seems like. It's the sky's the limit almost. So speaking of exciting season finales, I mean, things that really are exciting here. In the news this week, Colin Donnell had an appendectomy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's okay. So, you know, that all turned out really well. I guess he was tweeting from his bedside, but it was an emergency appendectomy. He tweeted that even an emergency appendectomy can't dampen my spirits about there being an all new hashtag arrow for y'all tonight. Thanks for all the well wishes. So that's great to know that everything came out okay.
Came out, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he was in the queen wing of the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
You think they let him in that nice private room of the queen's?
That'd be funny, because, yeah, we saw the queen. Was it the queen wing again? Yeah, because they had Walter in there. So we're back to the hospital in this episode with Walter. So,
you know, the rich families in Starling City keep that hospital in business, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right. Was there any other news that we had that we wanted to discuss?
I don't know. You know, honestly, aside from that, the only thing really going on, I shouldn't say the only thing, because I tell you what, Arrow is spreading out everywhere. I mean, it's, you see it in a lot of different places. It's mm-hmm. getting a lot of exposure lately, but, the exposure, other than an appendectomy, was mostly kind of prep, you know, hype for the last few episodes of the season here. So, you know, they're getting everybody excited for these. So, I hope it kind of gets more and more people into this show, and then I hope over the summer they'll replay the season so people that didn't see the rest of it can kind of catch up too.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's that would be a great way to get people into it. It also depends on when they're going to come back in the summer, so they should be able to schedule all the episodes. And I know we had talked previously, there was it was like, was it TNT that was showing a bunch of Arrow episodes? They were having like a marathon one weekend or something.
Something like that, yeah. And you know, the stations like this have been known to show like a couple episodes in one night,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of put that on their schedule for several weeks. You know, so it's almost like 2-hour little movies, you know, of the series, and
right.
And that way you can get through them faster. So I don't know what they have plans for, if anything, but it would be a good way, especially after all this hype at the end of the season where more and more people are getting into it. It would be a good way to catch them up so they get excited for next season.
Yep.
You can go online. You can go on CW.com and see them, but you can only see 5 episodes at a time, at least right now.
Okay.
So
interesting. Well, we'll have to keep people apprised as we go into the summer hiatus here. Well,
right.
Let's get started with our discussion topics, because there was just – I mean, there's just tons of stuff that was going on here, all sorts of stuff. But the biggest thing was finally answers.
Yes.
So we got all sorts of answers to questions that we've been talking about since probably episode 1. So I'm just going to start breaking some of these down. If you have some you know, thoughts or any other things that you noticed here, just go ahead and feel free to interject.
All right, let's make this list here. What do we got?
All right, so first off, and we've heard people speculate about this on the show, but I don't know that we ever actually knew, because you can have a character on the show say what happened, but they don't really know until, you know, someone says that they were the ones responsible. But how did the Queen's Gambit sink? Moira had suspicions that it was bombed. Or there was explosives on it, but, you know, she can be an unreliable character, so we didn't know that. Well, we finally find out that, yes, indeed, in fact, it was explosives that were put on the boat while it was still docked at Starling City. So Starling City is somewhere that has a port that is accessible out to the sea that takes people to China, which I guess would be the Pacific.
Geography. They were gone for a long time, so because he said they were going to be gone for, what, 2 weeks or something like that, or a few weeks?
Yeah, like 2 or 3 weeks, I think, so.
Yeah.
But, and this was, yeah, so this was in the flashback. So we find out that, in fact, that Merlin had someone put a bomb on the boat because Robert was not playing you know, ball with the rest of the consortium, the group, which appears to be, as you mentioned earlier, it's Merlin, Frank, who's the Asian businessman that we had seen working with Moira a couple episodes ago. I can't remember his last
name. Frank Chen.
Chen, right.
Yeah.
Robert Queen, and then two other people that never speak and only get minimum wage on the set, I guess. So
there's no Russian maid there, though.
Yeah, she still has not. That's interesting. Yeah, they didn't have the Russian maid in that. They had Moira answering the door. That's interesting.
She's going to come back as a supervillain, the Russian maid.
Oh, so nice to see you again, Mr. Queen. So, we figured that Malcolm was behind the sinking of the Queen's Gambit, which is true. But the other thing that showed up in this episode, and this is kind of a instead of a good news, bad news sort of episode, this is kind of like a bad news, worse news. So the bad news was that, yes, the Queen's Gambit was bombed or you know, had an explosive on it. But who was really responsible? Frank was the one that planted it on there. The man who had been helping Moira and that she felt so bad about, you know, having been killed just a few episodes ago. And I think we all felt really bad about that. And now the writers, you know, turn around and say, you shouldn't feel bad for this guy at all. He's the one that killed Robert Queen and stranded Oliver on the island. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, it's like, what?
Well, and he was the one that was supposedly helping Robert. That's who Robert went to stop Malcolm, too.
Right. And they were going to meet.
He betrayed him.
Right. And they were going to meet in China. Because Frank was talking about, hey, why don't we fly over there together so they can talk to the. Because I think it was Frank had some people in China that they were going to use to get funds to help buy up other parts of the glades before Merlin could buy up the blocks, I guess.
So he couldn't take control of them, which, it seems to me like there might be a better way to stop him from doing that, but I don't know, maybe not. Maybe that's the most efficient way, but...
Well, let's take a step back. Let me see if I can recite kind of what the plan was, because that's pretty much what the whole season's been based on, is that there's been this plan that this group has been following and that they were doing prior to Robert Queen's death, and now the time frame's just kind of, you know, changed and everything like that. So this group of the consortium, they are. Using their influence to blackmail, or they had been using their influence to blackmail other rich people and influential people in Starling City into donating money to social change projects. So basically, if there was a guy that was running an illegal casino or something like that, they found out some dirt on him, and they used leverage to say, "Well, why don't you make a donation to to the soup kitchen or something like that?" Okay, is that, I'm clear on that so far? Is that, that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so then their plan was to then use this money to try to clean up Starling City. And Starling City proper seemed to be doing okay, but there's this section of it, the low-rent area called the Glades, which they just couldn't clean up. It was... No matter how much effort and money and work they put into it, it didn't change the fact that the Glades just had a bad group of people in it and just bad stuff was going on there. So it was Merlin's idea that they were going to have to raise the Glades down to the ground and rebuild from scratch. So everybody else was thinking, okay, well, we'll just, you know, move these people and we'll tear it down and we'll build it back up. But his thought was, you know, why do we even have to go to that trouble? He just wants to destroy it and then build it back up. And so he was, Merlin was slowly using his company to buy up parcels of land in the Glades so that when it came time for rebuilding, he already had the land rights for whatever it was. So in order to stop him, Robert Queen and Frank were going to decide to start buying up some pieces of property as well, quietly, so he didn't find out. But obviously, Malcolm did find out.
Now, do you suppose Frank told him, or do you suppose he just found out, blackmailed Frank, or coerced Frank, or whatever, or how do you think that went down? They didn't say.
Right. I think it might have been some kind of combination of both. I think he probably found out. I don't know that Frank, based on what we've seen of Frank in previous episodes, I don't think Frank went to him with this information. I think he found out something possibly about Frank, and then maybe Frank said something in order to save his own skin. Because there was talk about Frank having lost one of his kids previously. If I'm not mistaken, maybe it was his wife.
I think it was his daughter. I think she got raped.
Was that what it was? Okay. There was some other tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what they were implying. It was something with one of his children, I think, I guess it could have been his wife. That did go by kind of fast. They just kind of referenced it to Malcolm referenced it to remind Frank how horrible of a place it was.
The Glades. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of their plan. And, Robert was not really a big fan of this. He thought that the plan, you know, was too cruel, but, he was being blackmailed by Malcolm as well, because he's got a ding on his record. I guess there was a city councilman or something like that, or no, a city planner who came to Queen and wanted a bribe, and they got into an argument, and Queen kind of flew off the handle, I guess, and killed him in some fashion. They don't go into too much detail about that, but
no.
So I think that was being used. So Robert was leaving on the boat to go to China to meet these other people that supposedly Frank had dealings with, which was interesting, because that's you've kind of always been pushing that. Why were they on this boat going towards China? There was some reason for that. And I think we can get into that a little bit later when we would deal a little bit more with that element. But so Robert was going along with the plan, but I think he was still working his other plan, to buy up the parcels and maybe find a way to stop Malcolm. But the most interesting thing to me, the biggest answer to me, was the fact that when they, at the beginning of their little meeting, revealed what it was they were doing in Starling City, they were being, totally altruistic. They might not have been using the best methods to go about it by blackmailing these bad people, but
right.
They're doing the exact same thing. And the book was a list of people that they had information on that they were using to blackmail. So the book that Ollie's been using of these bad people, they're bad people, and it was that this group had dirt on them, and they were using it to squeeze money out of them to basically fund social programs in the city. Totally 180 degrees from where I thought it was going.
Yeah, well, and then that brought up a few other questions. Number one, what that did for me, when I found out what the consortium did, is that it kind of revealed to me that Robert was not such a bad guy. I had always kind of assumed that he was one of the corrupt people and one of the people that would have maybe even been on the list at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But now it kind of shows that no, that's not what he was doing at all. It's like a rich man Robin Hood kind of thing, or
right.
I don't know. It was almost like it's like this game that the rich people were playing in Starling City.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that Michael Douglas movie, The Game?
Yeah.
It reminded me of that. It's just all these rich people playing against each other. That's not what the movie was about exactly, but so. That was kind of a big reveal to me, because I always just kind of assumed that Robert was one of these bad guys and he was trying to turn it around and make up for all of the stuff that he had done. But that's not really what it was.
Yeah, well, that was the way he talks in the pilot, on the boat and everything like that. It's like, I failed the city and this mm-hmm. is my fault and I have to atone
right.
for my sins and all this kind of stuff. And it's
well, and so then I got to wondering, what did he want Oliver to do? Or maybe he didn't. They were on a lifeboat at the time, so I don't know if he had a major plan. But was he thinking that, you know, the stuff that we were doing wasn't effective, and I need to give him this so he can take it a step further or something like that. So was that what he meant, or did he just want to stop Mal? You know, I don't know. It brought up all these questions, like what exactly was his intention for Oliver?
I don't think his intention was to, like, take it to another step. I mean, if you look how his son was, you know, we got to see pre-Island Oliver.
And that's a good point.
Yeah, his hair was beautiful. It's like, hey, Dad, pizza guy can't break 100. Like, you got change? And so, you know, he's talking to Frank at the time, and he's reaching into his coat to get his wallet, and he's like, come on, time's wasting. It's like, boy, you are just impatient. He's impatient. He's impetuous. He's cheating on Laurel. So, that is not where...
I like Stephen Amell as a brooding vigilante a lot more than I like him as a spoiled rich kid.
Yeah, but he does the clash, the comparison between the two ways he plays the characters, I think is really well done, because it just shows us how far this character has come. And, you know, it literally, he's 180 degrees. He's gone from two-timing on Laurel's sister, you know, hey, calling her up and saying, hey, you circle the parking lot a couple more times because your sister's here, you know, and saying, hey, I love you. Yeah, okay, oh, I'll take a picture of you. I love you. To, you know, the way that we see him interacting with Laurel in this one, and she's like, you know, just go back and tell Tommy that, you know, you're not in love with me. And he's like, I can't do that. You know, I can't lie anymore, even though he is. He's lying about bigger things, but
his lie quota is full. He can't lie about it.
Right. So, like you said, he does a really good job on that.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell his attitude. it was just opposite ends of the spectrum now, but he's actually kind of annoying as the spoiled rich kid. So,
yeah.
But he just gets freaked out real fast by Laurel's proposition, but. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm still wondering what. I don't know. The whole thing with Robert and on the lifeboat with Oliver is still a bit of a mystery to me, because it just seems like he could have told him more before, you know, he took his own life.
Yeah.
And kind of let him in on what he did want him to do. But on the other hand, you know, maybe Oliver finds out a little bit more later on down the road, you know, in some other flashbacks that we haven't seen yet, after the island or while on the island or something like that. So.
Right. Well, I'm sure there's probably, you know, it's like he keeps flipping through the middle of the book, you know, the diary and getting names and stuff. It's like, well, maybe if you looked in the very first page where it says, you know, hey, here's a list of all the people that owe us favors and money. You know, it's, I'm sure there's instructions, just to read the manual.
He just skipped to the middle.
He always does. He just flips right to the middle. It's like, oh, all these
he just closes his eyes and goes, let's see, who am I going to get today? So I like that.
One of the other big answers we got was, you know, why was the boat out in the China Sea? I mean, like, what's the reason for them to have been way the heck over there, you know, not anywhere near Starling City or, you know, whatever, wherever that is in the United States, somewhere between the East Coast and the West Coast, I guess, with a port. So
I always envision it, around Seattle or something, not for any reason other than just at one point he was in Seattle.
Right.
In the comics. But
I keep seeing it on the East Coast now because they keep using Baltimore and Philly as the cityscapes in between. So I don't know.
It's in Kansas.
Yeah, yeah. It's near Smallville, right?
Yeah. So. That's why it took so long to get to China from the boat. You know, they had to go over land. So
right.
So that's why it was in the China Sea, and I did kind of like how they planned that it would blow up and sink while there was a storm, so it didn't seem like sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't fool Moira, of course. So.
Right. Yeah, somehow she still was able to kind of see through it. She, in the flashbacks here, it seems like she doesn't really know anything that Robert's doing. You know, she thinks that him being out is him having an affair of some kind. Not the fact that he's meeting with a secret group, having a cabal in his living room about the future of the city.
Isn't it always like that?
Yeah. It's very, just, you know, quiet. It's quite sort
I of swear, thing. Honey. It's not another woman. I swear. I'm just blackmailing rich people. I swear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so you know, at this point, we think we know really like what the consortium's ultimate goal was. And then Merlin has a goal that now he's superseded on the group. He's using his influence and the fact that he has pressure on everybody else. So he had something on Robert. So he uses that to pressure Robert and then finds out that Robert's still working behind him. So he has Robert killed. And he uses one of the members of the group to do it. And then at some future point, you know, he finds somebody is, there's somebody else that's, you know, pulling strings in the group behind him, which turns out to be Moira, you know, to have him killed, but she fingers Frank. And so Frank gets killed. And now there are these two other, you know, so it's Moira and Merlin, and Moira at this point, I really don't think has any kind of leg to stand on. Other than the fact that she finds out that, you know, Walter's still alive. And then there are the two people that we don't, you know in the group, but, you know, to date that just don't talk. They're cowed enough, I guess, that he's already gotten their services rendered or whatever.
Yeah, or they're saving them for something else later on. So
yeah,
that's always possible too.
So Malcolm's big plan then is to do something, create some kind of natural disaster to destroy the Glades. And by destroying the Glades, meaning just like take it down to the foundation, just wipe it completely off the face of the earth, all the people in it. Which would include Roy Harper and his family, and the CNRI offices, I believe, are in the Glades as well, right? Because that's where we saw Laurel walking around. So there's concern with this, you know, for some of our secondary characters, and obviously just for the, you know, for the city, you know, in its whole part. You know, that's not a good way to do city planning, I guess.
So and the way they don't tell you exactly what he's going to do, but he makes reference to Unidac Industries,
mm-hmm.
and something that they're making that can take care of this for him.
Right, and we've heard about Unidac before. They were the company that Mr. Patel was trying to buy in the episode where Deadshot took a shot at Walter. Walter was going to buy him. Mr. Patel was going to buy him. They were having a bidding war, and it was way back in the, I think it was the second or third episode with Deadshot then.
Oh, yeah. That was a long time ago.
So, you know, they've been planting the seeds of this company's name for a while now. We find out
what kind of.
Go ahead.
What kind of natural disaster could this machine, you know, replicate or, you know, make it look like? I've been trying to think of what it could be. Maybe an earthquake, I think, but I don't know how they would do that.
Yeah, my first thought was that because the cover of the book has the these lines on it, you know, this weird design pattern, which when the Savior episode was on a few weeks ago, Oliver figures out that those are the that's the pattern of the subway line that runs under the Glades. And that's where the Savior's running his train back and forth when he's doing this weird broadcasting of killing people online.
Right.
My thought was that he's going to use, you know, he's going to pump water into the subway tunnels and do something, you know, down there and like basically like erode the city so it just kind of caves in upon itself.
Oh, okay.
But there is mention that the device or whatever it is he's getting from Unidac Industries is called the Markov device. And looking up Markov, that is the surname of a character named Brian Markov, who is also known in the comic books as Geoforce, who is a superhero that can control Earth with his thoughts and whatever. So, you know, a metahuman. Which is what they've talked about not having in the episode, but I think an earthquake is probably a very good idea. Some sort of sonic generator or some sort of explosive device or something like that that will cause a rift or a earthquake. You know, maybe there's a fault line that runs through there that we don't know about or something along those lines. think that is where we are going on that.
Hmm. All right. We'll have to see. That's got to be the finale right there.
Possibly. It'd be even more interesting if they did it in the next episode and had to deal with aftermath in the finale rather than leaving it as a cliffhanger. But who knows? You know, however it works out, I'm sure it's going to be very exciting. I haven't seen any of the teasers for the episode 22 yet. So
no, I having a hard time deciding if I want to watch them or not. So
yeah,
there's quite a bit out there, but I'm excited.
Yeah. I've read a few little blurbs, but, just, you know, the basic descriptions and stuff there. We're not going to get into that right now on this episode though. Some other, like I said earlier, the other part of this episode really seemed to be kind of this bad news, worse news, you know, storyline that they were going through here. So we've got, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we've got Tommy saying, you know, I can't be with you. And they break up. And on this episode, Laurel goes back to him and says, you know, we need to talk. There's unfinished business on my side, you know, and I need to know the truth. And he's like, all right, the truth is Oliver still loves you. And she's very shocked. So she goes to Oliver and says, you know, is this true? You got to tell Tommy to, you know, get back with me or whatever. And he's like, nope, I still love you. Okay, I'll see you later.
Yeah, well, he had told her earlier, hey, just be honest with people. So he was just doing what he told her, you know?
Right, right. And because Laurel needed Tommy to be honest and she needs Ollie to be honest. And so now it's kind of, you know, that whole part of the love triangle is completely out in the open. You know, the biggest secret that is still there, she doesn't know that he's the vigilante, though. I'm thinking this may also come out in the next two episodes. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, it might. It might. I mean, she knows eventually. We're pretty sure. So it seems like it might be a little early. But I think she's going to figure it out fairly soon. I think we had mentioned earlier, too, in the season that I don't want him to drag out her, you know, not knowing too long because, we said she's smart and she's going to figure it out anyway. So, it could be before the end of the season.
Well, and Merlin may have already figured it out. I don't know. There are just some of the looks when they're in the hospital and John Barrowman's talking to Ollie afterwards where he's like, oh, did they figure out who kidnapped Walter? And Oliver's like, no, there was no, you know, no sign of anything like that. He's like, oh, man, that's too bad. Well, and, you know, Oliver's like, well, you know, they'll get what's coming to them because Oliver knows that it was Malcolm, but it seems like Malcolm might know a little something else there as well that he's holding back. Which, you know, again, I think would be another great reveal because it would then go back and allow us to look at a few episodes here with Malcolm and see, okay, so he knew, you know, all the way back to whatever episode, and that would really change the way that we view the character, which is always interesting. I like
Well, and it wouldn't surprise me because he got, I mean, when he was shot back when Tommy found out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he was, I guess he was unconscious or whatever. He was in the room right there, right. Underneath Oliver when he pulled the hood back and showed Tommy. So, I mean, there's no reason necessarily that he might not know. I mean, we thought he was unconscious. But,
oh, except Furari. I mean, come on. No, I don't know. You know, whatever. Yeah, right. He was supposedly poisoned and was out, you know, unconscious. But you're right. I mean, that's totally a possibility there.
That's believable. It wouldn't be too far of a stretch to believe that.
Yeah, I like when they go back and they reveal some other little tidbit that you didn't know at the time about a character, and then it changes the way that a scene or a series of scenes, you know, of character interactions works because it gives it a whole new level. I think that's a really interesting take on storytelling.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, and I'll just mention this quick. We would bring this up any other time, really. But with a character like Green Arrow in the comics, he doesn't, at least at some point in the history of Green Arrow comics, his secret identity is not really that secret anymore, right? I mean, people know he's Oliver Queen.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah, since the probably maybe late 70s or something like that. I mean, yeah, at some point it was like in the early, early Green Arrow when he was still wearing the red gloves and everything and didn't have the goatee. He probably had a secret identity. He was, you know, because it was very Batman-esque, right?
Right.
But once Oliver Queen, you know, has the current look with the goatee and stuff, yeah, his secret identity is not much of a secret identity anymore. It's pretty common knowledge.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think they'll take that direction in the show. And I kind of hope they don't, you know, makes it a lot more interesting if he's kind of a mystery, but, you know, somebody like that, it's not out of the stretch to have lots of people know who he is. So, mm-hmm.
Well, one of the other, pieces of bad news that we get in this episode apparently is, after Oliver, runs his shakedown on the underground, casino owner, really, it's like, okay, we're going to sneak into the casino and we're going to plant a bug, Felicity. Okay, we got this. And they go through it, and then she kind of gets found out, and Oliver just bursts in anyway. It's like he didn't want to do that in the first place, and that's what he ended up doing, you know, busting in. But he finds out that Walter's dead, so he goes back and tells Moira and Thea, and that's when Moira kind of goes, No, this is not possible. And she runs away, and Thea and Ollie are like, what's going on with Mom? And so Ollie follows her, and that's when she goes storming into Malcolm's office. Yeah, and I don't know if you caught this. There were two other Asian gentlemen sitting with Malcolm that he dismisses in some other language. Now, I heard someone online say that they thought it might have been Tibetan, which would lead back to the story of the Nanda Parbat, where Malcolm went for his retreat or whatever after his wife died, which is interesting. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if that has anything to do with that other than the fact that, you know, we were also introduced to other, you know, Chinese people in this episode. So
I'm not real up on my Tibetan right now. It's been a while. So,
yeah.
you know, back when I climbed Everest, it was good, but, but I like that. I like that idea, that possibility of somebody, you know, that he's still working with these people that he was on the, you know, where he went to in seclusion, I guess, mm-hmm. after his wife died.
Yeah. Training or whatever he got.
Yeah.
So,
you bring up all these points that are making me think even more of this episode. It's getting even deeper as we talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was just so many layers and levels in this episode. It's just, and stuff that, you know, like that might seem innocuous, but, you know, well, maybe it's not. But anyway, so Moira goes in and is screaming at him, you know, it's like, I thought he was safe. And so he shows her a video of him alive in some cell somewhere. And, Oliver's hiding out on the roof across the way, you know, with his little walkie-talkie arrow, whatever it is that is giving him the information. And that's when he realizes his mom is involved way deeper than he thought. No, he's still alive, and Walter's still alive. And now your friend's dad is responsible for putting him in this place. So Oliver has to go bust him out, which I thought was great. And actually, first time we've seen Oliver working in another city. He actually went to Bloodhaven to bust the heads instead of, you know, just having him be in Starling City. So can't be too far away, I guess. Oh, there's a train that goes there.
No.
We know that.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would be too far.
Yep.
So I was a little surprised at his reaction to his mom. I mean, I know that would be shocking to find out that she was more involved than he was kind of hoping or suspecting, but it seemed kind of obvious as you listened to her that she was doing it so Malcolm wouldn't hurt Walter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least to me, it seemed like that. But, you know, I mean, if you're in shock from finding out all this information, you might not think about it like that. But,
right.
And either way, she is kind of involved. So it's, but I was just kind of surprised at his reaction. Usually he's quick to forgive his friends and family. You know, usually he thinks the best, you know, and doesn't assume the worst with his friends and family. Now, somebody that's on the list, he just assumes the worst, but if he knows them, so
benefit of the doubt kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And of course, you know, like we said earlier, Diggle's just like, oh, man, I told you she's bad. I followed her. I knew all this already. So, but, I think the most shocking part, and this sequence or this scene gave me, you know, goosebumps, was in one of the flashbacks, Malcolm's talking to Robert about his wife having been killed in the Glades, and that's why he wants to clean this up, because the place is, you know, just a cesspool of crime and debauchery and everything like that. And we knew that the wife had been murdered, but we find out, like, the chilling reason, like, why Malcolm's probably so nuts about this is that his wife had called him, but, quote, she knew I was in a meeting, so I just let it go to voicemail, and then she called again, so I turned off the phone. And we find out that she was actually calling for help, and she left him a voicemail, you know, dying, and he sat in his office and just listened to it over and over and over and over and over again until probably he just went nuts.
Yeah, completely.
That is just twisted. I mean, chilling and just, ugh.
Well, and I really like how they finish that scene. You know, Robert says, I can't imagine. And he said, try, yeah. You know? And as soon as he said that, I tried. You know, I mean, as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, man, yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible. And you know, when I even think any kind of thoughts like that, it bugs me. And like you said, you got goosebumps, right? Well, he did it over and over and over again, he said. You know, so listening to something like that for so long, would that's got to mess you up. It obviously did mess him up.
Well, yeah, and also the just him saying try to Robert, to me, seemed like a veiled threat too, because, you know, it's like, well, you know, you try thinking about something like that, you know, because I can arrange something like that to happen as well. You know, it's just given all the backstory that these two characters have and, you know, what they know about each other. I thought that might, you know, I thought there was an element of that in there. So that could be, again, just another level. Any other,
I got to say real quick, Barrowman, yeah, just amazing, amazing villain. I mean, he's just perfect. I cannot imagine anybody else making this guy so just creepy.
He used to be such a nice guy in Doctor Who. So,
fantastic.
Any other bad news that I'm forgetting about? Those were the big highlights, I think.
Yeah, then those covered the whole episode. So yeah. lots of bad news. You know, bad news. You know, Oliver didn't have change. You know, but other than that,
right.
So, well, I mean, I guess, you know, the bad news. I guess this would be considered bad news, at least to Laurel. You know, she's like, oh, Ollie, I love you. Let's move in. And he's like, whoa. Oh, how am I going to get out of this? I'll sleep with her sister.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, and I got to go to China for 3 weeks.
You know, I guess that was bad news, worst news. And then, you know, of course, we know that she ends up dying too. So right. that's even worse. And so that was, wow. that made me hate preppy Oliver even more.
Yeah, he's just not a likable character.
No.
He's fun to watch, but he's not likable.
No, and you know what? I do like that they did that, because it kind of puts his new character, it puts the vigilante character, it gives you a sense of retribution, you know, like he's making up for just what kind of a bad person he was. Not bad in a Malcolm Merlin mm-hmm. kind of way, but bad in just a spoiled little rich kid brat, you know,
self-centered kind of way. And now he's not. He is still out for himself, but he's also looking out for other people as well. And
right. He's Tommy Boy. He's making up for his younger years. So.
but not that Tommy Boy, the other Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
So, well, as is per usual here, the title of the episode is an insight into a number of elements in the storyline itself. So this is called The Undertaking, and there are a number of different undertakings in the episode. We'd be remiss probably not to at least touch on these. So the main one in terms of The Undertaking is what the consortium keeps referring to as The Undertaking, which is the cleanup of Starling City and the destruction of the Glades. So that's, you know, sort of the main undertaking. But there's also, you know, Oliver's undertaking to stop Malcolm and you know, fix whatever this group is still doing, like whatever is coming here in the end of the season. We've got the Queen's Gambit trip to China, so that's you know, that's a small undertaking. The undertaking you mentioned just a few minutes ago about Laurel asking Oliver to move in with her, that's a big undertaking. That's a big step. And
apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool, whatever. So I thought it, also while we're talking about that, I just want to say I thought Katie Cassidy did a good job of kind of playing this kind of flirty version of Laurel, this younger version of Laurel. Because, you know, she's kind of laying on the bed and studying her LSAT book or whatever it is. And then she goes over to get something out of the drawer. And she's like, which drawer? Is it the bottom drawer? And she keeps kind of bending over, you know, and she seemed really flirty with him and everything.
Really? I hadn't noticed that she kept bending over. Interesting.
You should rewatch the episode again.
I'll have to go watch that scene again. Yeah.
Yeah. It's 28:37 through about 32:56.
Yeah, I got that
on
written
DVR,
down. I was going to do that right when we were done.
Okay.
No, so you know what? You can also tell that this whole and obviously it would, but the whole sinking of the Queen's Gambit and everything that happened in that 5 years changed everybody connected to that so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it changed Laurel so much too. I mean, she wasn't she didn't seem as much like a brat, obviously, as Oliver did. You know, she was very likable, actually, but just kind of young and flirty, like you said, and peppy, you know.
Right.
So she got a little bit colder and darker in those 5 years.
Right. Well, and I mean, she grew up and she got a job. I mean, she became a lawyer because obviously she was studying to be a lawyer at that time. And she just, you know, she grew up and, you know, became an adult and became responsible and, you know, had to take care of herself and, you know, had to put away the stuff from her childhood, and obviously thinking that the person you were in love with is dead. I mean, that's really going to help you grow up really quickly, I would think.
Yeah.
So,
I like her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's a great character, and I feel sorry for her because Tommy just seems to be being so mean to her in these last couple episodes. And I see, you know, I understand what he's doing. But he's not going about it in the right way. He wants Laurel to be happy. I think that ultimately he does want her to be happy, and he would really like to be with her. But he sees that Oliver is in love with her, and as he revealed, I think it was last week, you know, he said, he's saying to Oliver, if she knew that you were the vigilante, she would fall for you because, you know, doing the, you know, he's fighting for truth and justice in the American way and everything like that. And same kind of thing that she's doing, with her law practice. So he's going about it from a very self-centered, selfish way, by just trying to push her away. He's trying to push her away from him and closer to Oliver instead of, you know, trying not to break her heart, basically. And she's just going to get pain from Oliver because, you know, she's trying to get with him or, you know, she thinks that he's trying to get with her and, you know, the whole triangle's getting really messy over on the Laurel Oliver side and Tommy's not really helping things.
No, I don't know if he's doing it for her or not. I mean, to me, it feels, and you said, you know, he's like, he's being selfish. It's just kind of like, well, fine. You still like him. You know, I'm going to take my ball and go home. You know, I mean, he's moping.
Yes. Moping.
You know?
That is a good word.
He's moping and he's kind of, making sure everyone knows that he's moping. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know if he's doing it for her or not. He's definitely kind of turned around as a character. You know, I don't like him right now as a character. I mean, not in a bad way as a show. I just as a person, I don't like him. You know, I'm upset with him. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, and I think that's the point right now. So
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't want him, his appendix to burst and die or anything like that.
Oh, you know, send him man, a card, too but. Soon. Too soon.
So, I just, yeah, he's... Oh,
but it has made him responsible. I mean, he's holding down a job at his dad's office. I mean, that's great. That's, he hasn't done
well. Yeah, but here's the thing. Knowing about the character from the comic book, but I don't know if it's going to go like that. But knowing how his dad was pushed over the edge, you know, makes me wonder. I mean, he may not be a very stable person either, just because, you know, he's Malcolm Merlyn's son, and mm-hmm. and so he may be kind of a overly emotional about those things too. So being burned like this by Laurel and Oliver and all that love triangle stuff, you know, how far can it push him over?
Yeah. Well, I think that's definitely something I'm sure we'll be exploring more in season two. So
yeah,
let's posit this. That's a really good point you bring up, though, about how he may be just as unstable. Imagine his father gets killed in the season finale by the vigilante in some fashion, whether or not it was actually, I'm sure it would be the vigilante confronts him and his father dies in some fashion, even though Oliver is trying to save him. Right. But you know, from an outsider's point of view, you killed my father. Right. And he knows that it's Oliver. How far is that going to push him over the edge?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be dramatic, and you know, it could make for a good story. There's two things I hope. You know, number one, I would really miss John Barrowman, so I hope mm-hmm. that doesn't happen because I like him. But yep. The other thing is, I don't want it to go too Spider-Man-y. You know, I don't want it to be right. too much like mm-hmm. like the first Spider-Man movie. But
yeah,
exactly, yeah. So, yeah. But and I could see that happening though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get to some of these. I'm sure it's the same for a lot of soap operas and stuff like this. You know, there are a lot of repeating themes and elements in many comic book stories. I'm sure like there are in soap operas, you know, people are dead and then they come back to life and it's not really them. It's their evil twin or their clone or, you know, whatever.
Well, but you know, this is real life too. I mean, real life things like this happen a lot. I mean, not with, you know, vigilanteism and stuff like that, but just with relationships and emotions and things like that. So I can, you know, I mean, that's not too far out of the realm. I would just like to see something new and creative. So it's not it would be a bad story. Just I'd like to see something original. So
yeah. Well, and we'd also be remiss if we didn't point out another amazing episode with Felicity. Emily does a great job in this episode. You mentioned here the fact that her getting introduced to when she kind of bursts in on everybody in the hospital to make sure that Walter's okay.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to talk about that scene?
Yeah, well, she did that before that, but I'll talk a little bit before that. She walked in when Oliver was talking to Laurel at the bar. There, where she was having bad coffee, you know.
Oh, right.
And, yeah, Felicity comes in.
That
and,
was a
and
great
Laurel's
scene
line
too.
Is, you know, excuse me, who are you? And so she gets introduced to Laurel. Laurel meets her, and then at the end, you know, she comes into Walter. Now Walter already knew her,
right?
But the rest of his family didn't know her. And so was it Moira? I think it was Moira.
Yeah, Moira's like, said, who is this?
Same thing. Excuse me, who are you? So she kind of, but she was actually in this episode quite a bit, and you know, she got I think she got Oliver and Diggle back together. I mean, she didn't do it directly, but she kind of put the bug in both of their ears, and eventually, you know, they came together at the end. And I think it was from her discussions with both of them that they, you know, decided that okay, let's go ahead and do this. But so yeah, she was great in this one, and her her performance in the underground casino was fantastic too.
Yeah, the line that she had where she's got a earpiece in, and she keeps talking to Ollie on it. She goes, "Oh, it feels good having you inside me, and by you I mean your voice, and by me I mean in my ear." So it's just like, that's great.
I'm going to stop talking now.
Yeah, I'm going to stop talking now, Isaac, because that's great.
Yeah, that would be my preference.
Yeah, this had some good writing. And you reminded me of the bar when Laurel's drinking coffee in the bar the next morning, you know, and she's like, "This is coffee's horrible." And Oliver's like, "Well, what do you expect? You're ordering coffee in a bar." You know, it's like, yeah. So they did a really good job.
And they did not overdo the humor this week. the little one-liners. I'm glad that, and it would have been probably would have taken this episode down because there was so much heavy stuff in it. So, yeah, they did a good job this week.
Yeah, I think for that humor stuff, you need to have a little bit of extra time and care that they do with it. And there was just so much other stuff in here. And like you said, they didn't overdo it, and I think that's good because there was a nice balance this week. I thought the jokes worked well and fit in, you know, just enough to lighten the mood, but they really wanted to make sure this was a very serious, more somber episode, and I think they totally accomplished that. So,
yeah, me too.
Well, as we, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's I agree.
That's okay. You didn't have anything else on that?
Didn't have anything else.
Okay. So as we do each week, we wanted to get into a few of the references that they had on the show back to the comic books, because, boy, the writers and the producers are really good at this. They keep throwing these things in. This has got a couple of, I would say these are the expert level references here. We had Robert Queen just getting back from Ted Kord's fundraiser, or a Ted Kord party. And Ted Kord is better known to people as the alter ego of the Blue Beetle, who is...
Love the Blue Beetle.
That would be awesome to have the Blue Beetle in a future episode of Arrow.
Yeah, I always really liked the Blue Beetle. You know, he was one of the characters that was in a lot of the comics that I was reading right when I was getting back into comics, right when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Booster Gold and some of those other Justice League
Justice League International, so. I think, was what they were in. That's cool.
Yeah, so happy to see that.
And then as we mentioned, Oliver went to Bloodhaven to rescue Walter, which is the town that's near Starling City. It's probably near Gotham as well, and it's where Nightwing. It's kind of Nightwing's stomping grounds, who is who Robin turns into when he grows up and decides to give up the Robin persona. He becomes Nightwing, wanting to keep the bird references and everything there.
And for Final Jeopardy, who do you have?
Final Jeopardy, we have, there's a mention about two people, Ray and Jean, that got mentioned. And, you know, just an offhanded remark, I think it was between Laurel and Ollie. And this is most likely, but we can't necessarily confirm this, but there's the only pairing of Ray and Jean that I know about in the comics are the Atom and his, Ray Palmer and he's the Atom. He's the guy that can shrink down into, you know, microscopic size and get into stuff. And his girlfriend slash wife, depending on when it was, Jean Loring. So that's pretty deep there. I think 90% of people probably just see that one go right by.
Mega subtle reference there.
And that's what I like.
Yeah, me too. I do too. I like how they put those because, again, you can tell how much reverence they have for the comics by putting that stuff in.
I still think it would be great if at one point they meet a like a CSI forensic detective or something like that named Barry Allen, you know, and just let's see what are we going to do with this? It's like watch the fans' heads explode. Really? Oh my gosh, the Flash might be in this. So that would be really cool. So, well, any other things that the Undertaking had to that stood out for you in the episode or anything interesting?
It was not long enough for me. So I hope they do. I hope they kind of continue with this storytelling for at least one more episode. They may do it up till the end there, but you know, these flashbacks that they did in this one, which was before the island. I heard someone refer to him, may have been even Stephen Amell, maybe in an interview or something, but they were calling them way back flashbacks. So these were flashbacks before the flashbacks that we've been seeing. So that's kind of how I saw it in my mind. And I wouldn't want them to do it the whole time. I think, you know, that would have dragged the whole season on way too long if they had just done these. And I like how it's like, you know, they're showing you how Oliver got to where he is now by doing these island flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And now they're showing how the other characters got to where they are by these way back flashbacks. So I like the storytelling in this episode, to be sure. So very good.
Oh, well, let me also mention then, I talked about several character storylines that they just kind of didn't even touch on this week after having been working on them heavily for a few weeks. So the first one is Roy Harper and Thea looking for the vigilante. No Roy, very little Thea, and only related to Walter's storyline in this one. So, you know, we've totally dropped that. And I got to tell you, with all of these storylines I'm going to talk about, I'd be happy if they did not do anything else with them for the rest of the season. Only two more episodes, I know, but I think it would be fine just to continue with this kind of the forward thrust of this story that we've got here, with Oliver finding out that Malcolm's, you know, doing something to the Glades, and what Malcolm is doing to the Glades, and the whole thing with Tommy and Laurel and you know, Diggle and everybody coming back there.
Yes, and it would be a great place to start season two. Mm-hmm. With that, so it could almost be just kind of a quick little introduction of Roy getting ready to meet Oliver or something right at the end, and that'd be part of the cliffhanger along with whatever else happens, and then you could start season two with that little storyline. It'd be a nice starting point.
Well, the other piece was the island flashback. The last time that we saw him on the island, where they were just getting captured by Fire's men, and he told Oliver that your time on the island is done. And we saw nothing else with Slade or Shadow or Oliver on the island. So there's obviously a piece that we need to go to there. The producers have talked about how the island pieces, or at least, well, Mark Guggenheim specifically, talked about how the island pieces, you know, serve as, you know, like you said, that kind of backstory is how did Oliver get to where he is today. And that they picture that each season is a year on the island. So, you know, they've kind of got basically built in, they've got 5 years of stories that they would tell, which would lead up to the end, you know, like the end of the fifth season would be the boat finding him. And, you know, that would just kind of tell that. And then I guess anything else beyond that would just kind of be gravy, right? So, you know, you would either have other flashbacks, or you just don't do flashbacks anymore. You just have, you know, full-on adventure stories with all the characters that you've introduced over that amount of time. But, yeah. So, you know, there's that big piece. And then there was nothing with Detective Lance and his looking for the vigilante. They just kind of dropped that in any interaction that he'd had with Laurel or something like that. So, again, I didn't feel like in this episode, I didn't feel like I missed any of that at all. And it's okay, I think, to have it to go away, like I said, for the rest of the season. It may be that they've just gone away from it for an episode, you know, and we'll get a little bit more. I'm sure they want to bring back some more stuff with Roy before the end of the season. So I think we'll probably see that. And there may be another island piece. Don't know. I think the island cliffhanger where it is could serve all the way through the hiatus, but we'll see.
What do you mean? I got to wait all summer to see if Oliver dies on the island?
I know. It's, you know, wait a second. No, dummy. You big dummy.
Come back to life as a clone of Oliver or something, right? Isn't that how that works? Superhero stories?
Oh, let's not start that. You know, it's like, oh, the Oliver that we see back in Sterling City is actually a clone of the original Oliver, and they kind of screwed up. That's why he's
bad storytelling. Yeah. Bad.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this has been a chocked, packed, full episode of Green Justice this week, so we hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it, and I was talking about it. It was fun. So, but if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you leave us feedback on iTunes. We love seeing that. You can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.